Okay, we celebrate the 6th of September. And I saw these people there, they were walking. And see me myself in 1965, seeing there was not very many people at 1969, seeing all these people, and I said, oh my God, look what we did. And I start crying. I said, did we did this? Did we really did this? And there was people coming from everywhere, every flag that it chose, they were from even from different states. And the more I see, the more I cry, because I never thought that we were going to make it so, growing so much. And I figured, oh my God, look what, and I told my aunt, look what we did. And I call myself, look what we did, you know. I call myself as one of the leaders, I should say, you know. A small leader, but I'll say a leader of the people. And then I see the students. When they used to come, bunches of students from San Francisco, L.A., they were all Anglos, you know, white. Mm-hmm. I didn't see no brown, no black heads, no nothing. And later on, I see that there were a lot of students, Mexican, and they were already, you know, going up in my family. As a matter of fact, in my families, I got two sisters. One, she's a superintendent at school, and the other one, she's a teacher. But she suffered a lot when she went to school because we got stories from that when she went to Santa Barbara, she put an application to go to Santa Barbara. She couldn't get into Santa Barbara, first of all, because she was from the Campesinos area. She was Mexican. She wouldn't qualify because she didn't have no money. Then Cesar said to her, you really want to go there? She said, yes, I really want to go over there. And said, you're going to go over there. You're going to go over there, and you'll see you're going to go over there. And she helped to Jerry Cohen to be a secretary. And she helped in the boycott in Canada. And she came back. She came back to Santa Barbara, went to school. She was going back and forth, helping the causa and everything. And she said it was a lot of discrimination. And not discrimination in a way, because she said, I feel that I don't wear the same clothes that they do. I have to go to the secondhand stores. I have to go whatever I can get. She got into that school and she got off, and she went to get her the whole thing to get into the school system, you know. She didn't want to go and, like, teachers say, no, she just went to the whole thing. My dad and all of us, we were just trying to find out how can we help, you know. And my daddy, he was working in his fields. He had a contract in his company, and he knew that was the best, and he knew, he said, just keep on going, and look what we're doing. We're doing this, we're doing that. He always used to show us, this is how we're doing. If somebody has a problem, we always come together and we help them. We always get them out of the problems. We always have these other things. All the benefits of the union. And the more he told us, the more we, more action, more, it was like a moral support for us. And so, but that sister, she suffer a lot. But right now, she's one of my best sisters. And I guess I didn't study very much, but I'm very proud for my family, because my family, some of my sisters, they got up, and they're really, I wouldn't say very, very, very wealthy, no, but at least to survive. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the important things that we mm-hmm. we look at into it. Mm-hmm. I think that right now, that's the most important thing, that people should know what suffer, and should know how it started, and they should know what even in the political way too, because this movement, the cause, has also political. It's part of the political system, and we have to get involved with everything. Everything that that we see is good for the people. I see it in my way. It's a lot of things that have been changed. You know, a lot of good things that have been changed for the farm workers or for the Hispanic. But for all of them, for black people, because black people, they're also in the farm workers. White people, there's also in the farming system, and I think this is good for everybody. It was not exclusive. It was not excluded just for the Mexican people. Mm-hmm. It's for everybody, and I think it's one of the parts that I really love that, and I really like it. In a way, I learn a lot, not by books, by seeing, and by learning, living into it. I learn a lot. I have a son now that he's 24 years old. He asked me about all this moment, you know, what happened and everything, and I tell him, and he said, "Then it was good, Mom, that you got into it." And every time that I feel like very sad for things that they're not going right, he said, "Come on, Mom, you're not that type of woman. It's just to stop. You're one of the strong ladies, and you better come out with that, you know." And I guess part of our my way of thinking, I think I got it from my dad. My daddy put us in this, and I really am so proud of my dad and my mom. My mom, she was one of the ladies that every place that they were going, she was arrested so many times in the huelga.
I want to ask you, while we're talking about it, mm-hmm. about some more of the women. I mean, maybe get some names, and like your sister, where's your sister?
Okay, my sister, she lives in San Diego,
uh-huh.
and she is an organizer for the local 102 convalescent homes,
uh-huh.
and that's what she's doing right now. Eliseo Medina, apparently he's one of the organizers or head of the
SEIU.
SEIU. Uh-huh. And Francisco Garcia, I haven't heard from him, or Alberto Garcia, their brothers.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's some women that that really did good. They went into good jobs.
You know, oftentimes when the histories are written, there's not much mention about all the hard work that the women did. Were there a, do you think there were a lot of women in the movement doing the same kinds of things you did?
Oh, yes. See, we were like, for example, when they send us to certain places, you know, they didn't send only men. No, no, no. They sent half of the groups that were men and half of the groups that were women.
So okay. In New York, you had maybe 12 women?
Okay, in New York we had, we were 35.
Oh.
We had 35, so, okay, see if I can remember. In New York, it was Juanita Herrera, Irene Terrones, Carolina Franco, María Saludado, which is my sister, y yo, Toña Saludado. Estaba Helen Cerda. Estaba, there was Helen Cerda, she was there. It was, this is another students, Francisca, we call him Panchita. What's her name? Ray, Frances Mayer, and Candy Clark. There was another one, Judy. Well, quite a few women. And in the men area, it was Jose Cerda, Eliseo Medina, Ñañez, Francisco Ñañez, Frank Garcia, Alberto Garcia, Andy Cabot, Tucklewin, or Catarino Tucklewin, Andrew Mansum. There were last names that I can remember. There were another one, Frank. There were Filipinos. This is part of the Filipinos. There were about 10 Filipinos that were going. So I guess there were more than 35 people, actually, because there were some of them, like Ferros. Richard Chavez, Dolores Huerta. She was there for a couple of months with us. So we were a whole bunch of people there. Mm-hmm. And it's something that they said, we are gonna get a bunch of these people and trying to concentrate in one place. Well, we took the grapes in New York. In 1968, we took the grapes the whole New York, and because it was affected, because we were a lot of the farm workers were going over there, and there were a lot of people helping us from the unions and from you name it, we had it. And so and then they started distributing people from different areas, like from New York, they start sending people back to different areas. Like my sister, she went to Indianapolis by herself. She didn't speak English. I don't know how she did it, but she didn't speak any English. And she went over there. She was the organizer. She was the coordinator. And she did a fantastic job. Then they sent me to Pennsylvania. Then they sent people to Miami, Florida. Then they send people to Canada, and send people to Detroit. They send people to Ohio. They just had it like pairs, you know. And all these people had to have a lot of knowledge of that city to really communicate with the people.
What about out here on when you were organizing, were there a lot of other women organizing too?
Oh yes, like in this area, like for example, we were going to the camps, like in certain camps that were going women and men, and organizers, there was Imelda Moreno. It was what's her name? Imelda Moreno, Carolina Vasquez, María de los Ángeles, Linda, she was from Ecuador, no, from Santo Domingo. We had Juanita Herrera, we had La Señora from Lomón. Can't remember their names, and they're already older people, but they're women. There were about five women in from Lamont that were organizers. They're women, and then it was Petra, Petra Honduras. There were Helen Cerda. There were. There were so many women that they're organizing.
Do you think it was a little harder for women organizing?
Yes. It was harder, first of all, because the people, the Mexican people, they were kind of hard for women to really concentrate with a man. For us, it was kind of hard. Not kind of hard, it was hard. They didn't have no... They didn't have no respect. They didn't have They didn't listen. They just say words like they were in a bar, and we were young. We were very young, and we were people that were not growing into that level. You know, our parents, they grew us very different. So we were not used to hear any bad words, no cussing. So when we started going into the organizing system, we had to listen to all those kind of things. They used to come out and just trying to grab us, like they were going to get us, like they were going to take us with them, and we had to survive. We had to fight. We could not be angry. And there were certain days that we even cry for things that they tell us. For women, it was very, very, very tough.
Did you do extra? Well, not extra. Did you train in nonviolence? Did you work with, say, Nick and Virginia Jones ever?
I tell you, I know Nick. I didn't know them.
Didn't know them?
No.
But you took some classes, some nonviolence classes and stuff?
What Caesar told us, it was the nonviolence. He was the one that he teaches mm-hmm. how to do that. He said, if you ever feel angry, don't think about it. Ignore that. And trying to get out more, like ignore the stuff or walk out. Don't listen to it. Because if you stay there, your patience is just... And that's the way we did it. Mm-hmm. There were certain days that we were so angry, we were so mad, like... We were ready just to go and fight. But then one day he said, you know what? He said, we've been all these years working in the causa to lose it in 5 minutes. Is it worth it? Just think about that. Just think about what you're going to lose. It's so many years that you've been working so hard and to lose it in that time. He said, no. I said, let's just go like Gandhi. Gandhi used to see all this fighting and everything. He just kept ignoring things. He would just keep going and going and going. He knew they were killing people, but that's, he knew that he was doing something good for his people. Caesar had a lot of things from Gandhi, ideas. And I think it's part of the classes that we got from him. He gave us some classes. He used to sit down and so tired. And he used to say, "I know you guys are tired," he said, "but let's not give it up." And one of the main things that we used to have, it was that all the girls, somebody had to have a guitar. So when we see the people who were just like, so tired, we used to get up and sing songs and make them sing it together. And one day, Caesar, and there was, I guess there was the worst time that the companies did. One of the trucks, there were a picket line, and there was one truck came over, and there was a whole bunch of people in the line, and that truck had to get out of the row in order to try to run all these people. He came, and he came to the meeting. He told us, he said, "Let's have a meeting." And he said, we saw him. He was sad, and everybody was sad. And we got up, and we start singing. The guy with the guitar, he saw that everybody was so sad. And I said, "Come on, let's sing a song." So we start singing and we start dancing. And Caesar, he was not ignoring. He figured they did to us all these things and these people are still happy. How? He came up and he said, "Girls," he said, "I don't know how to say it," he said, "but didn't you feel what they did to us?" "Yeah." "How do you feel?" I said, "Well, we feel that we had to fight. We're not going to stay. We're going to have to fight. They think that if they think they're going to get rid of us like that, no way. We are just going to have to do it." And the following day, it was more people than you ever thought that were going to come out. I said, "That's right. Our cause is going to be on and on and on. We might not finish it, but somebody else still will." And it did. I see that now, right now. Sometimes they have some meetings. They come students from Fresno, from San Francisco, Mexicans, and they come and they say, "We never thought that you guys had it so hard like that. What did you do when they came in violence with their guns in their hand?" "Nothing. We did it in the boycott. The boycott did it. In the boycott, the managers, they used to come up with the gun and used to say, 'Come on, get the hell out of my store, or I'm going to shoot you.' We used to say, 'Okay, go ahead.' We never back up. We never back up. They thought that we were going to get scared. No, the following day, if we were four of them that day, we were going to the store. The following day, there were about 15 people." And I said, "No, that's true. We can never finish with these people." So it's something that we have to look at it. I said that right now I hear commentaries that they said the cause is finished. Caesar's die, everything is die. I don't think so. I think the people is getting more brighter. That's what it is. So now. And that's the way it is.
Okay, it's July 9th, Sunday, July 9th. We're back in Pixley, and we're back with Antonio Soldado. Antonia, you had some things you wanted to add to your...
Yes, I think I missed a whole bunch. I think I did, because... Okay. I think I missed a lot. We were talking about when we start, you know, or when we start working here in this area on the strike. I had it in my mind, and it looks like it went blank.
Well, there were some more things I wanted to ask you about, too. I wanted to know more about when you were organizing, you know, when you were going in the camps and stuff.
Oh.
I know the process that you went through, uh-huh. But what did you say to people that made them want to join the union? How did you get them to come over?
Well, we had to work it out really good into that people, you know, because... See, farm workers that were not very disciplined at all, mm-hmm. and to get into the unions, they didn't know what was a union at all. So we have to start, like, with the union, you get more benefits, you had more like voting situation, like if you get into the union, you had the voice of saying, how much did you gonna pay to the grower? How much you guys gonna pay me? How much, what kind of benefits we gonna have? You know, like if we're gonna have some insurance, we're gonna have some, because at those years, back in those years, we didn't even have workers' compensation. So we were going towards finding out, even ourselves, we didn't know what we're getting into it. So we had to get some people involved. And so we got to them and we just say, listen, if we get a whole bunch of people and we unionize, then we got to say something. We get be able and we allowed to say, you know, can you pay us more? Can you give us some sort of a benefits? Years before that, if we even say, how much you guys gonna pay us, they used to say, hey, you wanna work? And if you don't, that's the white line back there. You can go home. So we wanted to stop that. We wanted to ask people, come on, let's go in and ask how much they're gonna pay us. But also at the same time, having a little paper to sign it and say, this is how much we're gonna pay, and this is how much it's gonna stay. We're not gonna back up. And that's why we were asking people. First thing we were asking the people, sign the authorization card, which is asking to get in elections. It was pretty hard to get the person. For one person, if we get a name from that person, it was like a goal in our bags, you know?
Were they afraid?
People that were afraid, but also they were understandable, because we used to say, hey, what kind of benefits they giving you right now? Well, none. We just got the job. But that's not enough. Okay? Some people that were afraid, and some people even threatened us to kill us. But we were just like, excuse my expression, but I think we were just like the people, like, the Jehovah's Witness go and knock the door every day, not until they answer you. So that's what we did. And finally, we got to some people, and that people, they said, okay, let's talk about it. What did you need from me? Well, we need your authorization. First of all, in the book, this is what we need. The authorization that you asking for an election in this company. Well, when they signed the authorization, we already got it. We said, okay. And then every time that we had something new, then we went and told them about it. So this person went and got some more people, and that man or that lady got some more people in their house, because that was the meetings that we had in their homes, and we got 2-3 people. And those 3 people, they were asking more people, friends of their friends, and then we start getting into meetings every day or every other day, you know. And that's how we got people. That's how we started getting into it. Listen, we need some benefits. We need the union. The union is good for us, because this way we sign a contract. This way they give us one wage and they don't back up, you know. And also we can also ask for some benefits. We also get some medical attention, you know. And they thought that we were asking a whole lot, you know. They thought, these people, they thought that it was a lot for the grower. Some people, they didn't understand why. Why we were going to ask the grower if that was the job, it was already there. Why ask him for some more? When we got satisfied with them, we told them no. First of all, when they train us to be an organizer, they teach us how to organize, and they told us that this grower sell the grapes for so much money. We have to have the wages they were paying us, plus the prices of the grapes, how much they were selling. So, see, if we were going to go and work it out with these people, we had to let them know how they were going to pay us, that they were not going to go broke in bankruptcy, because they were making more money than what they thought. At those years, the grapes, it shows on the, fruit options, they show that was selling a $20 or $25 a luck of grapes, which is there was 23 pounds in each box. That means they were making more than 30-something dollars in a box. And they were paying us $1.95 at that time, not even $2. So they were making a lot of money. A lug. Okay. So at that time, we figure, okay, if they paying us $2.90 an hour, we were making it three or 400 boxes with 3 people. There's some crews that were 4 people, and the crew they call them, because when you pick grapes, you get 4 people, 3 people to pick and take out, and 1 to pack. So when you make 300 boxes, you divide it in the 3 people. So we were making it so much money to them, but they were not paying us.
You were making maybe 300 boxes an hour?
A day.
For 4 people.
For
3
depends
people.
Depends on the... We always look at it this way, that if we had 4 people, we had to make 400 boxes in order to be having bonus for 100 boxes for each. Okay, but if it was not that much grapes, we were looking into 50 boxes. They were the last that we could make when there were grapes, a lot of grapes. So we were making them a lot of money. Okay? Why they didn't share it with us? And this is exactly what we were telling the people that we were going to go and organize. We used to go and tell them, listen, how many people you are in your crew? When they said 3 of us, how many boxes do you make? 350 or 380 or something like that? Okay, say they sell them for $25 a box. With one box, with 3 or 4 boxes, they pay the crew. Mm-hmm. What about the rest of them? If you make 300 or 400, 100 boxes, they can go for whatever they fixed the land and everything. They pay the whatever they do on the grapes. We work a lot, but they also make a lot. Can you imagine they got 250 boxes extra for their pocket? Then they start thinking, yeah, that's right, huh? Not only that, the material, they don't sell it just the way it comes. They sell it, and the majority, that's how they sell it. They sell it, they're gonna pay, say, 50 cents a box. They order a million or 2 million boxes, they not even buy it for that price. They get it for half of that price. And don't you ever think that money that they keep, they're not gonna pay us not even half of what they making. Don't you think it's fair? And people start thinking, yeah, that's right, huh? And you figure that with another four boxes, they pay us our benefits. They pay us our benefits, because the benefits is not very much neither. Not only that, but you hardly get sick. So if you don't get sick, that means you're not gonna waste no money from them. But here, we want that paper to be signed that if we get sick, we can get paid for it, the medicine. And that's exactly what we want. If the person that were smart, you know, yeah, that's right. That person went and talked to some of the people and they said, are you interested? If you're interested, we're going to have another meeting tomorrow and you can come and listen to the organizer. Well, the following day, we went back to that home, or the other following day, and we came back and we had, instead of talking to three people, we were talking to seven people or eight people. But the growers that were smart, okay, when they thought that we were already organized, all these people, they fire them. They fire them, and here we are again, starting all over again. But at that time, Caesar said, okay, this is just not going very well, okay? We're gonna have to push the law that if they fire these people, and if we be able to get some election, these people has to come and vote, okay? And these people has the right to vote, yes, but with these people outside, they're the ones that have to come up and get the work, and we win the strike, or we win the elections. And that's just how we kept these people over here bright out. We kept telling, don't worry about it. When this thing happens, when this election gets over, you guys going back to work. Are we really? Yes, you will. And that's how it happened. People went back to work, and people, these people right here, they knew already that if they were gonna go to another ranch and work or break the strike, they were gonna be in bad shape. So instead of doing that, they kept to stay in the same ranch that they would stay, and they didn't work. They were not gonna go and break the strike. And this is how we kept it apart, because we started, and then we end up to having all these people outside. And it was sad for us, because we were so much. We were from 5 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes we were making house calls at 10 o'clock in the night in order to keep them out of the company knows that, to know that these people that were sympathizers with the union. We used to make meetings at 1 o'clock in the morning in order to keep them out. And you know what? They used to put one person outside and sitting in the car watching us what we were gonna do. We didn't know. Sometimes we figure, okay, that was so late. How did they know? So there had to be one of the persons, They used to send one person very sympathetic to the union. How did they knew? Because that person, they went and told them, you know what, they had this meeting, and they said this, and they said that, and finally we catch up with that person, and we told them, we know that that's a person right here that goes and tell, and we knew that, but we don't know who is it. All we know that this is happening, and somebody from this group is telling the company. If you wanna go and tell them, fine. But I tell you one thing, that when this thing is over, you're gonna be like a black ball, you know. Mm-hmm. You are gonna be up and down, and you're not gonna be able to get into anywhere, because we are not telling anything wrong to these people. We're not trying to tell them to go and kill so-and-so. We're just trying to get our rights. And our rights is to just to get pay enough to survive. That's all. You want to keep on doing it? Fine. You want to listen? Fine, because we're not going to do nothing wrong. And we find out sometimes that the person get up, we shouldn't even know, but he got up or she got out and walked out. Then we knew that was that person. They make some sort of excuses that they had something in the stove or they had something in it. And that was it. We find out right away who was the finger person. Mm-hmm. And this is how we start getting into the camps. I didn't told you before this one, that when in the camps of Marcos Yananovich, Filipinos, when they came up, when they came out on strike, it was so sad because they felt like they were in the camp and they can get out on strike. So they got out on strike and they thought that they were going to be able to get inside back into the camp, coming back and forth, because that were their place they were staying. And the saddest part is that when they went to eat breakfast, they found the breakfast in the ground. They put all the food in the ground and they said, if you want to eat, just going to eat like pigs. And that was one part of the saddest things, because people that were trying to organize them went to see all this. And this is people that's been working for this company for a long time. And this is how they treat him really bad. And it was something that we didn't understood. That just because we were asking for wages, we were not asking for no lands. We were asking for wages, decent wage to survive. We were not asking them to support us, to buy whatever with their pocket. You know, we had to put our job into it. We knew that. But at the same time, we were looking into that. They treated really bad the people. Why? So Caesar came one morning and it says, this is how people, they do it. Because they don't have no respect. And they should respect their workers, because the workers are the ones that are making the money for them. And why they doing it, I don't know. He said, but this make us more stronger in a way in our union, because this is how we show other people. This is how they respect us. We were so many years, and when we ask for wages, this is how they respect us. Throw the food in the ground. And that's not right. And it was incredible. you know, this is, we felt like we were doing good, but at the same time they make us sad because the way they were treating people inside. And I myself, I thought many times, should I go on? Or do I'm doing something wrong here? But then I had my parents that were very strong for the union, and they were the ones that were saying, we have to keep on going. Even though we see so many things, we have to go ahead and go and do it. You cannot sit in the middle of the row and stay there. Nobody's going to come and pick you up. We have to go on and get into the end. If we be able to get into the end, we don't know. There's going to be somebody else who's going. Maybe they're going to get on to the end. But we're going to have to do it. And that's just how we did it. And so many organizers, we were standing one day, and like I said before, Caesar asked for volunteers, and he always looked for single, because that way we didn't have no responsibility in a home, that somebody was keeping us back. And he says, okay, you and you, you're going to Lamont organizing. I turned around and I said, you didn't ask me for a volunteer, to be volunteer. He said, yeah, but I know you volunteer. Like it or not, I was there, you know. I had to be there. And it was hard. It was hard when you start all over again with some people. But you already knew how to get into
it. Did, you know, you say you stayed in the union, and your parents were very strong for the union and encouraged you. But were you attracted also by Caesar and Dolores? Were they real special people for you?
Yeah, that were my special. There were people, there were, how do you say? It was just like, we were just like a family, mm-hmm. Okay? If we had something to eat, everybody had something to eat. Mm-hmm. If we didn't have, used to say, well, what we got to eat today? Rice and beans. That was our food, rice and beans. One day we turn around and we say, Caesar, I'm tired of eating rice and beans, he said. Well, girls, that's all we got. And if you want to keep on going, we're just going to have to keep on eating rice and beans. Rice and beans. We just, there was hardly even tortillas in there. You know, or flour to make tortillas. There were some ladies, they make tortillas, you know, but if we didn't have the flour, it's just no tortillas. So we had a lot of beans, and a lot of rice and beans and potatoes, or a lot of, people used to go and pick potatoes. They used to bring some sacks of potatoes. They used to bring some beans. They used to bring some green beans. You know, people that were sympathetic with the union, they used to bring it. It was just like when there were a lot of green things, you know, in summertime, there were no problem with it. But when in the wintertime, there was a problem because there was hardly you can get anything. There's some people there that were from Pearlville. They bring us some oranges in winter. They bring us few things, you know, but not very much. It was one time they came up, a man from L.A., and I don't know who was it, but he brought so much sweet bread. It was a truck full of sweet bread. And we used to make jokes. We used to tell Caesar, can I stand up over there in the corner so I can sell some pies and sweet bread so we can trade it for other things? And we used to laugh. He used to laugh. He used to say, come on, girls. We got some beans and potatoes. Come on, let's eat.
Were there other people in the union that you were real close to?
That was Caesar, mm-hmm. Dolores Huerta, mm-hmm. That was Tony Randai, Gilbert Padilla, and his wife. Tony Randai, his wife, Rachel. And that was Julio Hernandez, and Fina. And there were the cook's ladies, Carmen Cerda at that time. And there was this lady, what's her name? I know her face, but I can't remember her name. Her name is Eva Alvarez. It was Carolina Franco's mother. She was one of the cooks. And they get up in the morning and they make breakfast. And then by 10 o'clock, they were in the picking line, making a picking line. They came back. They helped us for 2-3 hours, and then they came to make some dinner, or they left the pots and pots with frijoles and rice, you know. And one lady, they stayed just to take care of so they wouldn't get burned out. There were some cases that were even cooked with wood, you know, because there were no gas. That area where we went to end up being over there, way outside, close to the 40 acres, that is the 40 acres right now. But we didn't have the 40 acres at that time. We had this place and they were renting it. I think they were renting it. I didn't know too much about it. All I know that we went to eat over there after the picket lines were organized and we had the meetings over there. And that place, it was always blowing, you know, some air. And they always had to cover. And if we don't have very much things to cover the beans, well, we had to eat it like that because there was just so much flies and everything. But we had to do something about it, so our food, so we can go in and work. In the middle of the afternoon, Cesar called us, and we always had meetings. And he said, we always had people who looked where the crews they were at, and they used to call, and they said, well, how many of you guys organized today? And we look at each other. Did you got anybody? Well, yeah. Did you got anybody? Yeah. Did you follow somebody? Yes. We always had to do something. If the crew get up early, then like I said before, we always had to follow them and get the address and their names and everything. But sometimes the companies, they put people themselves to follow us, and they make us to crash, you know, purposely. They hit us. They pay them to hit us in order to stop us from catching that
person. So they would hit your car with their pickup trucks and stuff?
Yes. Mm-hmm. There was one time that it was myself, my sister Maria Saludado, and the one who was driving the station wagon, it was Mike Vasquez. And in that car, it was coming another lady, Amelia Cadena. It's my aunt.
Amelia, it's your aunt?
Amelia Cadena is my aunt. And see, what happened is that we were coming, and there were two stop signs. And we're coming straight right there in County Line. And they were supposed to make stops, both cars. But we were the leaders. We were ahead of all the cars. So what they did, they hit us in the middle of the station wagon. I don't know. It was so exactly the way they work it up, and they hit us from one side and the other side, and we were not be able to get out. Okay, they thought they were gonna crash us and hit us and kill us, but they didn't. I guess the Lord is always with what. It was with us all the time. The man he was driving, which is Mike Vasquez, he didn't have no driver license. And we always were having all these little things ourselves. Why? It's because And certain people, because there were different people that were coming from different areas and different picket lines, they have their leader. Okay, so we were the captains of that crew. And we were following somebody that day. We couldn't catch him because these two cars hit us right there. And the rest of the cars, they couldn't go through because, see, there were so many people behind us that they had to stop because they were witness of that. So the people from the company, they just left and we couldn't get in touch with them. But then later on, one of them, the last car from that, they came out from work, he came up and asked us, he said, what happened? Why did you stop following us? And we told him, they hit us and they stopped all the people. They hit you? Say, yeah. Purposely? Yes, they did. And one of the witness from that car that man he was talking about, he recognized the people from this side and from this side. So they knew that they were from the company.
Which one? Which company?
They were from DiGiorgio.
DiGiorgio?
At that time. And so that's how we find out. And we always, when that happened, the people, instead of being more off, you know, to be more scared of the union, they got more strong. And they said, no, this is wrong. If they were not doing something good for us, they didn't have to care. But that means they're doing something good for us. That means we have to respond to them. We have to talk to them. And one of the foremen that we have here also, that he came up on strike with the Giorgio. His name is Joe Cerda. Mm-hmm. He was one of the foremen in the company. He had all his people for the union. And the day that he talked to him, he was going to try to talk to us, but we couldn't trust him. He said, no, we can't trust you. We don't know. Well, the thing is that Joe, he knew Caesar, and he was talking to Caesar. All this time he used to talk to Caesar, and he used to tell him, don't worry about this. Make the elation. My people, there were about 90 people, and his crew. He said, don't worry. He said, all the people, they're working for DiGiorgio. It goes for the union. He said, maybe it's 100%, maybe not 95% of that people, it goes to the union. Caesar knew that, but we didn't know that. And he wanted to talk to us and tell us, don't worry, you know, go to another crew, go trying to get another crew to
be. The reason you were following them was to know where to put up your picket?
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah, because whatever they get into it, that's where we stand up right there and picket.
Wherever they went in the field.
And Joe kept trying to keep us out of there because he figured if I talk to them, the company going to notice that all these people is for the union, and he didn't want this to happen. Mm-hmm. And so he was trying to talk to us, and we didn't want to talk to him. And finally, we came up and told Caesar, it's a man in DiGiorgio, and he's very handsome guy. I used to tell him, he's very handsome guy. He said, come on, girls. Not looking to the handsome guys. He's just trying to organize, I told him. I said, yeah, but he was trying to talk to us about that all his people there in the union. He used to test the organizers. Okay, did you trust him? Did you tell him that he told you? Did you believe that? Well, we don't know. Then don't believe it. Don't trust him. If he tells you that all these people's for the union, trying to stay there, trying to let him know that you don't believe that. Yeah, that happened. That day we were talking to him, Caesar came up into the meeting and he said, you know, he already talked to Joe night before. He said, you know what? I love you guys. I love you with all my heart. Is that I know you don't trust hardly nobody, and that's how I want you to do. Don't trust them. Is that this man, I'm going to tell you, this man, we've been having talks, we've been having meetings, and his name is so-and-so, and this man told me that you didn't even give a talk at all, not even to say hello. I mean, this is too much. That means you don't trust him at all? No, we didn't. That's what I like about you guys. Stay away like that. And let me tell you, we are going to get all these people. Finally, we saw that it was Joe. So we know that this man is already in. But don't talk loud. Don't say anything. We're just going to leave his crew. Let's find somebody else. We went and find somebody else, and then somebody else from that picket line told us, this guy is for the union. How do you know? Did you trust him? Did you let him talk to you? Yeah, he did. He came and be very friendly with you, maybe, because he wants you to leave him alone, but we're not going to leave him alone. They said, come on, let him be alone. He said, come on, you should trust him. He knows it's ours, which is, it was his brother. So we asked him, what's his name? He's one of the servants. Oh, okay. We just let it go. But we didn't know. I said, no, maybe he's trying to be one of the servants, but he's not one of the servants. We didn't know him. He came up and talked to us. He said, you can go and look for another crew. I can tell you where the other crew is. Why? You don't want us to pick around in your crew? Why? Because you don't want to be in the union or what? We always had to. They said, come on, girls. I'm one of your side. My people are in your side. How do we know? They said, I'll let you know. Okay, when they told us, we let you know. 3 days from now, we're going to have a meeting. And we just, it was getting closer to the elections. I said, okay, fine, let's go. But this is how we work. But we work real hard. And they had like, for example, if they change their crews, when they fire their crew and they stay inside, they kept talking to the people, the new people, and they used to tell them, come on, this is a strike, and this is why you came over here, because the people I had before, these people, they were already for the union, and that's why they changed. That's why they brought you from Mexicali or from Ciudad Juarez, you know, because the company knows that all these people already in the union. People came up and told us so many bad words, so many deals, so many things, you know. And they used to work very hard themselves, too, in order to try to organize. They were organizers, too, you know, the crew pushers. And this is how we find out that when they were working really hard, they were giving us the hard time, plus themselves, they were passing a hard time too. And but Caesar always worked real close to us. Caesar, it was one of the persons that he always kept us so close. We were so unique. We didn't do nothing, or he didn't want to do anything until he talked to all the crew. I say, come on, Raza, I'm going to talk to you guys, since this is what's happening, and I want your advice, you know. I want your opinion. He didn't do anything until he got all the crew together and said, this is what's going to happen. What do you guys think? You think it's right? You think it's wrong? For the majority of the boat, this is how we're going to go, if you want to. We always had a democratic way to do it. And he used to say, well, you are the union. I'm just the leader, but you are the union. You are the ones. If I go and talk to somebody over there, I'm going to tell him, hey, I need this. But I know that I got somebody backing me up, you know. I cannot go by myself and say, I'm going to do this. And who are you talking to? Who are you supporting? Who's your people? And if I don't have any people in my back, behind supporting me, it's just like me talking to the air. Okay, so I need you guys. I need your support. I need your advices too. Maybe sometimes they help, maybe sometimes they don't, but I need advices from you guys too. So he always got an opinion from every one of them, even from the cook person. So we always had a very unique group. When we first were working,
that you were 17?
I was 17. We used to work with some growers. It was not much about the growers, but they were the crew pushers. Mm-hmm. You had to give them, you had to flirt around with them in order to keep you out of the big problems, you know, that they give you a chance to pack your different ways, you know. Or the labor contractors, the labor contract. Usually the women, we had it, how do you say it, harder, because we had to put up with all that kind of stuff. And some of them, we grew up very restrict, like my parents, they were very strict with me, mm-hmm. or with us, you know, that we're seven girls in our family. And so my dad always, it was just like picking anywhere, you know, where the girls that were at, because he knew that the growers or the crew pushers, they have the crew pusher, the second crew pusher, you know, the helper, they always come out and tell us some words, you know, that we didn't like to hear it. And like they said, if you want me to do this for you, you have to do this other thing for me. And I said, why? You know, why should I? Well, come on, you're a young lady, you know, you're pretty, they're always trying to, what we call in Spanish, they always lavar el coco, you know, you always watch your hair. And we had it rough because sometimes the youngest ones, they had to take it just the way they wanted to do it. But we were not that dummy, you know. We always had to fight for ourselves. We always had to defend ourselves however well we could, you know. So we always did it. But the labor contractors, they were the worst part, because they came up and they said, for example, my dad had seven girls, and where they had girls, they always had a job for us. They always said, we always protect you, Lorenzo. You always said, you know, you're a good worker. It wasn't because we were a good workers. Well, that's what we felt. We were not because we were good workers, because we were girls, you know. And they always take advantage of my dad sometimes, because they put us to work. And there was cases like they came up and give my dad a beer or two beers, and they thought they would see it. He paid for the day, because my daddy received that beer. But my dad started watching them and look around and say, come on, you know, that's not right. I came and worked, my girls, they came and worked. You have to pay for it, you know. Come on, Lorenzo, you know, give us a break. No, 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 no. That's my girls that are working for you. My girls are making the money for you. And I want to get paid. We need to get paid for that work. And we did. Just one example, one of the labor contractors, and it's not going to be hard to mention his name. His name is Benny Martinez. That Benny Martinez, in 1960, 66. They got him because of the fraud. They never reported the Social Security. And he was taking Social Security. And he came out to my dad and told my dad, Lorenzo, he said, could you give me the Social Security from your girls and yours? My daddy turned around and told me, he said, why? He said, because if you don't give me the Social Security, I cannot report that money, and they're going to put me in the can. My daddy turned around and laughed. And he said, now it's your turn. You want to be cooking yourself in that can? He said, you can be in one of those, because I am not going to give you my Social Security so you can save yourself. He ended up to be in jail. But he was doing that. And he always take advantage, especially in families that they have girls, because they thought that they were not going to be. But my dad always show us how to fight. And he always thought that was, what it was right, it was right. And when it was wrong, it was wrong. And he always said, this is wrong what he's doing, and he's going to pay for it. And if he's going to have to pay for it in jail, he's going to pay for it. He always said that, but he never thought that he was going to be really end up being in jail. He was in jail.
When you said they took advantage, do you mean they didn't pay girls as much as, or anything?
They didn't pay us. They didn't pay, for example, they didn't pay us like the rest of the people, especially if we were in the peace work.
Uh-huh.
They always thought that we were not watching it while we were doing it. You know, like if we were making some raisins. I did make 200, what they call them, plates, raisins. They didn't pay us that much. They figure they're not going to count it. They thought we were so dumb. See? And girls especially.
And afraid
like that, you know. They said, well, they're not going to count it. But we always did. And I guess it was part of that. Part of the whole problem was that in those days, those years, the families that were not in school, kids that were, they didn't know too much about it. It hardly could read or write. So they took more advantage of that situation. Mm-hmm. And now, at that time, in our family, we were kind of a little bit more bright out, because my daddy always thought that we had to have education, but if we could, it was just you could, you know. But we always, my dad always pushed us to go to school, to learn to fight. And that's one of the things that I'm proud of my father and my mother, first of all. It's one of the things that teach us how to survive and how to fight to live. So I think one of the main problems that they took advantage of the girls, because they didn't know what was right or what was wrong, you know. And some of it they knew, some of it they don't, but the girls there suffer more than the guys, you know. And those years there were a lot of families they believed in to go to school, and they didn't believe that the girls to go to school. The boys did, but not the girls, mm-hmm. you know. I have one girlfriend that she never finished high school. She never even went to school, because the parents, they never thought that the girls were supposed to go to school. So if they didn't do that, can you imagine that we were going to try to defend themselves? They believe that you have to respect your older people, especially if it was your boss. You had to respect them, because this guy is paying you for what you work. And that's part of the situation that they took advantage of that, because our same thing that the parents, they didn't know too much about it. But that's what I was saying. I'm so glad my dad, my parents, they were more little bit more disciplined in the situation of that, defend it and fight for your rights.
I know you didn't live in a camp, but what was life like for the women that were living in the camps?
Okay.
And the young women, too.
On the camps, I did live in the camps.
Oh, you did?
Yes. We didn't actually went from the growers. They came up and picked us up in a truck. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. But we did live in a camp. As a matter of fact, in right here in Fowler, California, mm-hmm. this other side of Fresno, we were there in one camp. We went to do some racings, and we were in the camp. And I believe that that time we were so hard because that time it was so windy. My mom, she was making some beans, cooking beans. And there was dirt in our plates. We didn't have a place to stay. It was in the empty land. And we had to be like that because we didn't have any other place. There were a camp, but there were no place. There were no houses. And we had to make our own private thing with boxes around in order to sleep. Mm-hmm. And that time my mom, she was cooking some beans. And she said, well, we're ready to eat. We were ready to eat. We sit down and all our plates got so much dirt. And my mom, she was warming some tortillas. And my daddy turned around and he looked all of us. And he said, just pick up your plates, girls. And pick them up and put the tortilla on top of it so you guys don't get some dirt in it. That's one of the times that I live in the camp. And then in another time, we went to the camp in this company that I call Asti, California, for the winery. And we're in that place, but that we have one of those, what they call them, camping.
Tents.
We got into that one, and we had to put something on the bottom so we won't get by the snakes or spiders. And it was this time that we were in this, got up in the morning, and we saw something moving on the bottom. We never thought, well, what was it? And we got up so quick, and I told my dad, I said, look, what is that under the pillow? And he said, where? I said, right there. He just picked up the pillow, and it was a snake. And then later on, when we went to work to pick up some, we were in the winery, picking out some grapes, and it was this little boy sitting down with a snake in his hand. Then he grabbed from the head of the snake. I don't know how in the world that baby did it, but he grabbed the snake, and I guess he put him in the plate of his beans, the soup of the beans, and he just keeping it, put him to eat some beans. He killed it. He killed the snake. And we came up, and then we saw that little boy with that snake. And we got so surprised, and my daddy started looking at everybody. He said, can you imagine how we live in here? And we were living in tents. There were some people that were living in rooms. It was very hard because there was no washrooms. There was no to give a bath. All we had to do is get buckets of water and give our baths ourselves, like that, cold water. And we were lucky that we had some water there, you know. And this is the times that I went to the camps. We were not like other people. They went straight to the camps and stay in the homes. No, we didn't. We were in tents, or either we didn't have tents, we were just completely in the empty. But we did live like that. Right here, we never live in tents in here. We never live in the camps here in Early Mar or Delano. Mm-hmm. We didn't. We had our own home. We always had a home, not fancy, but we had something, you know. We had a roof. And that was the only time that I think my daddy felt so sad at that time that I was telling you about the beans, because he got up and he said, just pick up your plates and put the tortilla on top of it so you won't get no more dirt in it. And it was the saddest time that in my life that I keep remembering why it had to happen to us that way, you know. But I guess that's the way it happened, you know. To make a story like this, you had to have something to go on, you know. And this is how women live. And now in the other camps, like you asked me, the camps that they had women and had men, I don't know how to tell you about too much about it. They had their like for example, they had one side of bathrooms and showers for them. There was only one set of showers and one set of toilets for the men and women. That's all I know. And they live in there. And they had a little, you know, those carts of train carts. Mm-hmm. That's what the camps that were one of those ranches. They had cars like that. Some of them, they had their own, they make their own camps, which is they were more fancy ones, but they were not that easy to get in. They had more like, they specialized to get higher Filipinos at that time. They didn't got Mexicans. They didn't teach Mexicans how to pack and pick grapes. They were more Filipinos. They were more into the specialty for that. That's what they used to say. The Filipinos, they're special to pick and pack. Mexicans at those years, we were not even allowed to pick even grapes. So when some of the girls, they get involved with Filipino, then that Filipino, if he really liked that girl, he'd teach them how to pack, you know. And this is how we started to get it into the packing stuff, because of the Mexicans start getting smart girls, and they said, well, if I know how to pack, it'd be easy. You know, it's more easy to pack than to go and pick grapes. Well, yeah, but that was the only way to do it. So, and they start seeing, now that the Mexicans know how to pack, how do you learn? You know, they used to ask you, how do you learn how to pack grapes? Well, you know, so-and-so is my boyfriend, or he's my friend, and he teach you how. Yep, that's how we got into it. In the beginning, we always used to do just the gondola and the cotton and the potatoes. The hardest thing the Mexicans, they used to do, and the Filipinos, they were doing, we thought that was the fancy job, is picking and packing grapes. And that we were trying to get it. But at those years also, they didn't have very, very much grapes plant. Uh-huh. You know, it was just a small plant of grapes. Now, right now, it's humongous, tremendous. You know, the agriculture is tremendous, bigger than mm-hmm. From any other country, I guess. And so this is how women, like I said, go back in the women. Women is always suffer a lot, but they had to work it up more harder in order to survive, especially the women, single mothers. They had to work very hard in order to, if they were too proud, they had too much pride, they didn't go back, they didn't win, or they didn't ask welfare, because in around here there was no welfare at that time either. It was just to give a food, and the food, it wasn't very good neither. So when they start giving check and food stamps, oh, that was a lot. But people, like, they were very proud, they didn't went to the welfare. They rather wouldn't be working. And women, it was the one they were, especially the women, they were single mothers, that they were either widow or divorced, they had to work, but they worked very hard for it.
Did your mother ever work in the fields?
Yes, she did.
Did she?
Yes.
So she would get up and cook for you in the mornings?
Well, we were all old enough, you know. We uh-huh. used to help my mom how to cook in the morning uh-huh. so we can go to work. But usually my mom, she used to make the lunches. And she used to get up real early in the morning. And
3, 4 o'clock?
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock?
Yeah, because sometimes, well, if we were going to go and pick potatoes, by the house, we had to get out at least at 2 o'clock in the morning because we had to be in the car at 3 o'clock to be at where we were going to pick potatoes at 4, 5 o'clock. And so we had to get up very early. My mom used to get up very early. And at that time, my mom, she didn't work. She didn't work because there were so many. We were so many. So she had to send some the other ones to school, you know. But by the time she get up and make our lunches and everything, she didn't went back to sleep because she had to make the other ones ready and, you know, and then wash them because she always had to wash by hand. She didn't have no washing machine, so she had to wash. And then we always had to wear Levi's, you know, and Levi's are very hard to wash. There was one time that lady, a neighbor, came past by, she didn't know us yet, you know, and she passed by and she told my dad, my mom, God, you got so many guys in here, you got so many in the family, and they're all boys. My mom turned around and she said, no, but it sure looks like I have a lot of boys. She said, I had to wash all these pants. And when she came and met us, all of us, she said, I thought they were all boys. She said, no, I got all girls. But it was no make any difference. We make the same job as the boys, you know.
When you were in the potatoes, what time of day did you finish?
Well, when we used to pick potatoes, we used to go, like for example, we used to take off from Early Mart at 3 o'clock, get to Shafter by 4 o'clock, okay? Then we were from 4 o'clock until sometimes to 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, mm-hmm. or 4 o'clock. By the time we got home, it was pretty late. So actually, and coming with no money, you know, it was kind of tough. Very tough.
So you'd get home around 5?
Sometimes, you know. And sometimes, like, if we get up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, then we get home by 5 o'clock. Or if we get up at 2 o'clock, we get home at 3 o'clock. It depends on what was the big land that we were going to pick.
And then your little sisters would get home from school about 4 o'clock?
Oh, 3. 3:30.
And yeah. Your mother would make supper for
so
you?
So my mom had to be ready already with the supper for us to come. The hungry man had to come up and eat, mm-hmm. you know. So my mommy had to be ready with the dinner already.
When you got home?
When we got home.
And then she cleaned up afterwards?
And then she cleaned up afterwards. And then she had to wash, and she has to wash by hand. So actually, my mom, she was working all day long.
And what time would she go to bed?
Oh, she probably end up being getting in bed about 10 o'clock.
About 10 o'clock?
10 o'clock.
So she would only sleep 4 or 5 hours?
4 or 5 hours, yeah. And that's what, when we got into the strike, it was the same thing, you know. Mm-hmm. We had to get up very early. My mom, she was one of the persons that used to go in and make some food. Mm-hmm. And at that time, you know, everybody was working. Everybody was doing something. Even the little ones, they had to do something. There's some pictures. There's some my nieces. They're 2 years old, and they had the flag already and the picket line. You know, when there were no school, and they couldn't even go to school, so they had to go. But that was we were already used to get up early because mm-hmm. we always get up early. So, and it was hard. It was hard.
Now, for the young women in camp, you know, say teenagers and. Did they have a lot of trouble with the men in the camp?
Well, I really cannot answer for them because I heard some stories, but I heard some stories that they had to be, if they wanted to be in the camp and in the same camps, they had to be with the guys, you know, mm-hmm. because the guys. Otherwise, the guys, they were going to go and do something else. There are some girls that they did suffer a lot, and they give them a hard time, especially if they didn't want to lay down with one of the men. They give them a hard time. But like I said, I cannot tell you the stories like for them because I heard those stories, but I never...
Do you notice a lot of...
real young women having babies?
Yes, at that time, yeah, and from the camps they got out. When they had the babies, they didn't even stay in the camps. They had to get out of there because they didn't give them no job then later on. But, like, it's hard to answer like that because, like, I did work for some of them organizing them, but it's like the women, they came from TJ, from Tijuana, or from Mexicali, or from Ciudad Juarez. It was women that it was already in the streets over there. So actually, I guess I might say that actually they already knew what they were coming into it. And if they didn't, it was kind of tough for them to know that.
So you think some of them were making some money? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and the easy way.
Uh-huh.
If that's what you said, that was trying to tell me. I think that's what it is, because I didn't see. I cannot say it,
but
actually.
There are a lot of stories.
But that's a lot of stories from
contractors demanding sexual favors and stuff too, even in the fields and stuff, right?
Even not too long ago, say about 15 years ago, there's still some foremans that, as a matter of fact, one of them that I know for a fact that they happened to me, his name is Manuel Diaz, and it's in Antonio Scaratan. But nobody wants to talk about it because they're afraid that they're some women they talk to. He told them to do a favor, you know, for the favors that he was making for them, that they had to let him use them, their wives, and they were young. And to me, he came one day and he said, "Well, how do you like?" He always carries some shirts, 3 or 4 shirts in his pickup, and he always find out what shirt I was wearing. So he always used to wear either shirt that I was the same color. And it was kind of interesting because I told him, I said, "What is this? Why are you changing a shirt? You know, you got your shirt is white, and I got a yellow shirt. Why do you have to change?" He said, "Because I always want to be like you." And I said, "Why? You're a man and I'm a woman." He said, "Yeah, but you can be my woman." And I said, "What?" I said, "You're full of prunes. I said, you're too old for it." I used to tell him that, you know. I never gave him any you know, ideas or anything like that, but he always tried to get something from me. And he could never do that. So when he couldn't, then he tried to fire me. And I said, "Why are you against me all this time? I mean, I've always been good in my job, you know. And why?" He said, "Because you don't lose anything." I said, "Why? Why should I? You're not even supposed to say nothing to me. Don't you have any respect for your people?" And he said, "Well, I always had to be, you know, take my chances." "Taking my chances of what?" He said, "Well," he said, "you know, you can have your job more easily." "What does that mean?" He said, "Well, you know what I mean. It's you're old enough to understand." I said, "You're full of prunes too." So from that time, he always gave me a hard time. And they find out a way of fire me, which is they did fire me. And they came up with their own way. But in the same time, I put up a fight, and I win my case. A year later, I win my case, but I won, and I went back to work, and I told them, I said, "See,